This is part of the audio program. I'm Jim Backus, and I'm going to interview with Bill Weaver, a North Dakotan, and the date is February the 24th, 1988. Bill, it's a pleasure to see you. You've had much experience in North Dakota radio and television, and we're going to get into that in just a moment. First, I'd like you to have to save this for the record, where you were born, something about your education, something about your early background, if you please, and if you wish, something about your marriage and your children.
All right, thank you, Jim. I was born in Doyen, North Dakota. It's about 20 miles east of Devil's Lake, and my dad was manager of a grain elevator there. When I was about 10 years old, he was transferred to Webster, North Dakota. Now, that's about 10 miles north of Devil's Lake. And there I took most of my grade school, and I graduated from high school from Webster. And from then on, I went into the broadcasting business. You asked about my wife, Isabel, the girl from Christine, North Dakota, who was a singer with the Gal Friends at WDAY years ago. Mm-hmm. And I met her at the station there, and the singer and the sportscaster got married. Our older child, Dick, now lives in Palm Desert, California, where he is a real estate salesman for the Desert Horizons Country Club, a very exclusive country club in Palm Desert. My next son, Kevin, believe it or not, Jim, is back as sales manager of WDAY Radio. And our daughter, Jane, has gone into advertising too, worked for places like Campbell Mithun and big advertising agencies, but is now a vice president of media for General Mills in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Jane is sent on trips all over the country. She works with all the magazines, Time, Newsweek, and all those magazines. And it isn't working with one of General Mills' advertising agencies. It's General Mills' advertising agency that overlooks their agencies. I think you know what I mean by that. And she has a two-year-old daughter, which is the highlight of our lives, our only grandchild. Little Lauren is 2 years old.
Well, I didn't realize that, you know, Bill, that your family is certainly into publicity, advertising, and show business.
Yes, it sure did.
Well, you gave them a good legacy, because I know that you certainly were probably the first play-by-play television radio caster, or a television caster. Is that right?
Well, that's true. It was back in June 1953 when WDAY-TV went on the air. And I had a 10 o'clock sportcast, and we did a one-hour musical show from 6 to 7 o'clock that night. Then we went into the films, as it was then, not network, and I had a 10 o'clock sportscast, which at that time was 15 minutes, Jim, not 4.5 like they are now, but 15 minutes. So I guess I was the first voice on the air for news, weather, and sports in the state.
You had a great background to the television era, of course. You started, I believe, in Devil's Lake. Tell me about your radio experience.
I started at KDLR in Devil's Lake. I wanted to go to college. Our family was Depression time and didn't have money for college. I'd hitchhike down the 10 miles to Devil's Lake every weekend and read for the station owner down there. Finally, he gave me a job. I later went on to KOVC in Valley City, where I was very happy doing play-by-play of all sports of two high schools and the colleges. And later I went on to KFYR in Bismarck and worked for a year. And then war broke out, Pearl Harbor came, and I went and joined the Air Force.
At that time, I suppose, Bill, during that period, you did a lot, you did everything. You know, the story was that that the announcers swept up the studio, and it was almost literally true. There was a good deal of writing the board, there was a good deal of programming, there was a good deal of reading the news, there was a good deal of having street broadcasts, and almost anything that came. And as I remember, and I have worked with you in the distant past, you were very articulate, and you could do almost any kind of assignment that came along.
Well, Jim, you brought back memories when you brought that up, because I want to say first that I came from a Depression family, and every summer the day school was out until school was back in the fall, I went to the farm, and I helped milk 12 cows in the morning and 12 cows at night. And I did everything there was to do on the farm for $1.25 a day. So when I went into broadcasting, I had a background. I felt I could talk to the farmer, the businessman, the banker. I could talk to those kind of people in their language. Now, you bring back memories of Valley City, which I'd get up often in the morning and do mid-morning devotions. I mean, play the records of the music. Then it went on to doing the morning news. Then maybe a couple hours off and come back and do the noon news and things like that. And then there was always a sportscast at 6:15 in the evening. And then it was out to do play-by-play. And just exactly what you said, Jim. I've gone out and done play-by-play of the Valley City Vikings, the Valley City Highlanders, and gone back and swept out the station and was through at 11 o'clock at night. All for $1 a day. $1 a day.
Well, it was a great period. You know, there were many very colorful announcers in North Dakota. There were some at KFYR, you know, who had the Class A, what we call today the Class A basketball.
Yes, I remember.
And there were some very colorful characters of whom you were one. But you made a passing reference to World War II. Pearl Harbor came along, and like many another, you decided to see what that was all about. Tell me something then about your military career.
Well, Jim, I was always, from the time I was a little kid, I was interested in airplanes. One of the biggest spankings my dad ever gave me is when I went up in an old Jenny airplane with a pilot from Webster, North Dakota. But he used to laugh about it later and said, look, I gave you a spanking for going up that airplane, and the United States government gave you $500,000 airplane and told you to go fly it. Well, Jim, I joined the Air Corps, and I went down to Texas, and I took my primary training. And then I took my basic training, and then the advanced training, and we were given our silver wings and made a second lieutenant. From there on, we were sent to Gainesville, Florida, and put in those high-powered P-47s fighter planes, which carries a 2,000-horsepower engine and what I think the finest airplane ever built, the airplane that won the war, Jim. P-51 pilots won't tell you that. But from then on, after 3 months, I was sent overseas, and they were losing some pilots from the group that had gone over there, and we were immediately put into combat. And we learned by doing. I flew 81 missions with the 8th Air Force over Germany and over France. I've seen the channels and the Zuider Zee and all those, the North Sea. I can see them in my dreams. But, Jim, when you're not married, didn't especially have a girlfriend, it was a great life. Flying combat. It's danger. You don't know if you're coming back or not, but it's a great, happy life.
Well, how many missions did you actually put in?
I flew 81 missions. They were somewhere between 4.5 to 5.5 hours apiece.
And you have some honors, I suppose.
Well, I earned, I don't know if I earned them or not, I was awarded 2 Distinguished Flying Crosses and 5 United States Air Medals.
Well, now, when you came back, you certainly wanted to get back into the radio business. There were rumors of television coming up over the horizon, and I suppose you thought of that, too, while you were winding up with the Air Force.
Yes, they sent me back from England to Texas to instruct pilots that would be going into combat, instruct in combat tactics. And I did that for about 6 months. And the war was winding down in Europe, and they didn't need pilots like they needed before. And any of us that had 300 hours or over of combat could not be sent to the Asian theater. They figured our luck had run out. And if you had over 300 hours, they couldn't send you to another war zone. Well, I had 304 hours. So one day they asked me, we're going to discharge some pilots. Would you like to stay in or get out? And I said, I have a broadcasting job ready for me back in Valley City, North Dakota. And I'd love to go home and start over again. So I immediately came home, and I worked about, 8-9 months at Valley City and WDAY. Called me one day and said they had a sportscasting job open, and would I be available? And I stayed there for 21 years, Jim.
Before we leave the the question of the war. Did you have some narrow scrapes? Did you have some narrow escapes as most the flyers did?
Yes, Jim. I have two I particularly remember. We've all been into the dogfights. We know that. I shot down two German airplanes, one ME-109 and one FW-190. And that's always a great thrill. But the second one I shot down was a case where one morning we had a briefing, and the colonel asked for the hands of four flyers. He wanted to send them on a low escort mission over to St. Joe in France. It was after D-Day, and the Germans were moving troops up from southern France to the beachheads and were moving over the top of a bridge at St. Joe. I was one of the four that raised our hands, so we skipped over the trees in England, down over the chalk cliffs of Dover, and up over the chalk cliffs of France, treetop, pulled up to about 1,000 feet and dive-bombed this bridge, and we got it pretty well. But the minute we came out of our dive-bombing, four German airplanes jumped us. And in about 3 or 4 minutes, there were four huge fires on the ground. Each of us shot down one of them. But just I was taking a head-on pass at a German plane, hitting him all around the cowling, he let loose two 20-millimeters and caught me in the right wing and blew all of the 50-caliber guns out of the right wing. That means I could not get any altitude. The throttle is on the left side of the cockpit, and I was holding the stick and the throttle in one hand. And the other pilots came and made an umbrella over the top of me so we wouldn't get jumped again. Well, things were going fine. I was limping along at 800 feet till I got back to the chalk cliffs of Dover in England. English had the barrage balloons up, 1,200 to 1,400 feet. That means I had to go another 150 or more miles around those barrage balloons. Well, we got around the barrage balloons, but the colonel was calling from the base and wanted to know how bad I was hurt. And he said, I'm coming up to look at you, and he said, I think you better get out of that airplane, because when you let the wheel down, the wing is going to break off. I told him it's a brand new airplane. It's only had three missions. It was a beautiful silver job, and he said, all right, open the canopy, get back 5 miles, open the canopy, take off your oxygen mask, unhook your microphone, and let your wheels down. And if that wing breaks off when you let your wheels down, jump, which I didn't relish at 800 feet, but I got back 5 miles, did as he told, let the wheels down, and that wing just wavered out there, up and down, maybe 2 or 3 feet, and steadied down. You land a P-47, a three-point landing about 90 miles an hour. I did this on a wheel landing about 140 miles an hour, and I was very happy 2 or 3 weeks later when the colonel gave me the Distinguished Flying Cross for bringing that plane home.
That's a great story. Now, you mentioned that once you were discharged, you went back to Valley City, mm-hmm. just to kind of warm up again for the communication business. And then, as you said, you were offered the position at WDAY, and WDAY was very soon coming on to television. And you were there 21 years, I believe you
That's
said.
That's right, Jim.
Your first assignment was news primarily?
No, I did sports, play-by-play sports, and only after 3 months. I had been out in California, Jim. I won't go into too much detail on this, but I'd seen a television show with a guy and a girl, and it was an hour every afternoon, and they would use film clips of things that happened around Los Angeles. I kept that show in my mind, that what a good show that would be to use live interviews instead of film clips. So 3 months after we went on the air, I went to Tom Barnes, the commercial manager, and I explained my plan to him. He said, all right, let's try a show like that. We got time during the afternoon, let's try it. And that was when Party Line was born, which lasted for, 24, 25 years?
Well, that's a bit of history, isn't it? That was the genesis of Party Line. And I suppose many, many people in the upper Midwest are acquainted with Party Line. It had an enormous audience. Wasn't it all over the clock? Was it morning? Was it afternoon?
Well, it started out from 3 to 4 in the afternoon. Then it had changed, being the networker changing a program, to 1:30 to 2:30. But we generally shuffled between 1:30 and about 4 o'clock. But the point of Party Line was to interview everybody five or six a day, but not anybody too long. I would never interview anybody. Only one person I ever interviewed over 10 minutes, over 5-7 minutes, and that was Governor Nelson Rockefeller of New York and his wife, because he was so gracious and so much fun, I couldn't let him go. But, Jim, we interviewed every celebrity that came to this city, and I can just, I have these pictures on my den at home on the wall, and if I can just enumerate people like Ted Williams, Vice President Nixon, Governor Nelson Rockefeller, Satchel Paige, Jack Dempsey, Joe Lewis, Phyllis Diller, Dennis Day, Cab Calloway, Zsa Zsa Gabor. Oh my, there's many, many more that I've kept pictures of every one of them.
Everybody who came to Fargo-Moorhead was on party line.
You remember Roy Peterson was a promotional manager, and nobody stepped into the station to party line that he didn't have a camera there ready for a picture.
Well, that's remarkable.
And not only celebrities, Jim, we interviewed thousands and thousands of people right here in our community who've done things for the community.
Of course.
Our pride of that one thing that we raised every year, we used to put lights on the Christmas tree and raise money for the Fargo-Moorhead Opportunity School. And before he passed away, Don Fraser, who was treasurer of the school, told me that Party Line had raised over $50,000 in 5 years, period, and had saved the Fargo-Moorhead Opportunity School. I think you remember that, don't you?
That's remarkable, and I do remember it. Mm-hmm. Now, you were anchorman for this show, of course, but you had a straight man who was very often a woman. You had an assistant. And who were some of those?
Well, we started out with a young girl by the name of Beverly Agnew that worked at the station. And then Beverly went on and I was married and moved away. And then next was, I just don't recall her name right away. Then came... Oh, boy, it's on the tip.
Verna Newell?
Verna, it came after Lois Leppard.
Oh, and yes.
Lois was working for another station in town, and I approached her for the job, and she came. And it just got too much. The Mail was running hundreds and hundreds of letters a week, and they were doing recipes and things like this and sending them out. So we sat down one day and decided we'd use two girls, one alternate weeks, and take the load off of the Mail and things like that. And then Verna Newell came. Vicki Selberg did work in there for maybe 2 or 3 months. But basically, Party Line worked around Verna Newell and Lois Leppard.
There were many, many people around the show, back of the scenes, you know. You mentioned some of them. Bill Weaver, I suppose. I'm sorry, Bill Snyder probably supplied some film from time to time. And Norman Selberg is another name that a great graphic artist. And you had...
Jim, I had two of the finest directors or producers you'd ever... John Kittleson, who went on to be with NBC. He's just a superman to work with. And he knew where I was going. I could pick up a microphone and walk anywhere around the room. And he was always right on me because we just knew each other what we could do. Dick Berdahl was also a director of Party Line for many years. And he was just the same as John Kittleson.
You had, in addition to these interviews face-to-face, you had some regular features, I think. You had, there was someone who talked gardening. There would be someone who would talk other subjects of interest.
Cooking,
for one.
Gardening, many things like that. But one of the nicest things I think we did, and I got the idea one day, it struck me out of nowhere, and it was one of the most popular things we did. Don Rosen and Pat Kelly were our piano and organist at the time, and each day we took 3 minutes for meditation and a hymn, and that was one of the most popular things that we added to the show.
Mm-hmm. Now, I want to get on to your business career, because on top of all that you have told me so far, you have had quite a business career. When did you decide to hang it up in broadcasting?
Jim, I don't know if any man has had a more beautiful life than I have, but doing what I wanted to do. So in 1964, I just decided I was through with working at 11 o'clock at night. I didn't get to see my children. I couldn't go to their band concerts. They were both good golfers. I couldn't go and watch their golf tournaments. I was on that air all the time. In 1964, I just decided I was going to go into business for myself. Now, I knew something about the advertising specialty agencies because I had some relatives in it and some friends in it. And it always interested me. Now, advertising specialties is calendars, pens, business gifts, all sorts of things like that, that you put a man's name, who he is, where he is, and what he does on those business gifts and calendars. So I started working for a firm out of Pennsylvania. And it wasn't over 6-8 months later, Mr. Caraway, the Caraway Company, long known in this area in the advertising specialty business, was going to retire. I went over to visit him one day and asked him if I could buy out his business. And I didn't have a lot of bucks in the bank, but I had a few, and we came to an agreement, and I kept the business. I renamed it the Bill Weaver Company, and I kept the business then for 18 years. I was very happy in it.
Can you tell me something more about the specialty business? It covered a wide range of advertising items. It's a mysterious business in some ways to people.
I think it's probably the most unknown business that there is, Jim. Especially advertising business can show you 15 to 20,000 items. Now, I'm talking about, I bet you if you look at your desk at home, you've got 7 or 8 items around your house or in your desk at home. I'm talking about pens and pencils and items on your desk, little notepads and things like that, on up to expensive business gifts for glassware, metal gifts and things like that, belt buckles. Right now today, they'll even put your name on your shoelaces if you want them. That's what the specialty business has gone to.
In due time, then, you decided to sell that part of your professional career and start to play golf. Do you recall when you sold your business?
Yes, Jim. You gave the date. This is February 22nd, 1988. But 2.5 years ago, I was 65 years old. And the rumor got around the state and the area that I was going to retire and sell out. I had no intention in the world of ever selling my business. It was very successful. I had 10 salesmen across North Dakota and Minnesota. But I kept getting calls from long-distance calls saying that we hear you're going to sell out and we want to buy your business. So I just said one day that two of my competitors came over, two very nice men that owned the competitor, and they said, "What is this story?" And I said, "I have no intention to sell out, but I'll sell anything if I get the right amount of money for it." So they said, "Well, we're interested." So I got my financial advisor and my accountant to come through and go through the books. They came up with the figure. Nobody complained. And it's been a very fine association with these fine people.
How do you fill your time now? I suspect that you and your wife do some traveling, and you said you're a golfer. And do you have other hobbies that'll fill your time here? I can see that you're healthy, looking good, and feeling good. So you probably have some interesting hobbies, too.
You know, Jim, I've talked to many men who retired, and they tell me they're busier now than when they were in business. And I thought, oh, that's a bunch of malarkey. But I found out it's 100% true. I get up in the morning. I have things I want to do. I like to do my yard work. I like to golf, but I'm not crazy about golfing every day of the week. I like to golf a couple of days a week. But I have other things that I want to do that I've never had time to do. I had never seen Theodore Roosevelt National Park. So we packed up and went a few days. I go down to see the Twins 3-4 times a year. I go down to Canterbury Downs 5 or 6 times a year. And I just make a mental note before I go to bed at night. These are the things I'm going to do in the morning, and I've never been bored one day.
You've seen some great changes in the radio and television business. You were in, you know, almost in a way at the beginning, certainly of television. And I suppose you've been staggered by the changes in the newscasting and in commercial television that we're seeing today.
Jim, it's the graphics. It's the graphics that change television. Do you remember when I used to come on with the baseball scores at night, runs, hits, and errors, and I had to stick up every one of those numbers at a time and change the names on it, and the football scores, I had to go stick it up a number at a time. No, they just send a typewriter and pound those out, and it just takes them a few seconds, or I'd work hours on those boards. And things like that have changed so much. And, of course, the color has come in now. That's made the big difference. And, just they've got so much more equipment in the photography line and things like that. And where we used the old Bolex camera, you well remember that, and then had to take it down and process it. Now the new style cameras, they shoot the film, as I understand it, and put it on the air practically, don't they, Jim?
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
Well, Bill, you and your wife have been certainly left your marks in the local theater, in the local music, in local show business, and it's certainly true. I think when you say that you've had an ideal life, you've had the wonderful life so far, and you're going to have many more years, of course. And you've left a mark, I think, in sports in North Dakota. You were a contentious play-by-play announcer in many ways, which is to be expected. And people will remember.
But Jim, we left out one point. Maybe I shouldn't even bring it up. Remember, I ran for mayor once and lost the election. Back in 1964, remember? Herschel Laskowitz had 20 years as mayor, and I ran against Mr. Laskowitz, and had a terrific campaign group behind me, and I lost my 700 votes.
Well, Bill, it's been a pleasure to reminisce with you, and I think this is going to be an invaluable piece of tape for future history. You can say to your kids that in some way you've left an indelible mark on history here in the Upper Midwest.
Well,
it's been a pleasure.
I'm very proud that you thought enough to ask me, Jim. I thank you very much.
The university makes the selections about people it considers significant, and it's been a pleasure to visit with you. And this is Jim Backus bidding goodbye to Bill Weaver.